I think 12 o'clock on the dot.
Look.
Oh, it's 11:59. Literally. I'll slow roll it. This is the biggest crowd we've ever had. Hello. If you are wanting to speak today, make sure you have your name on the sign-in sheet up here.
It's right here now.
And when we, we'll need it to call names, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So run back and forth. When your name's called, go ahead and come up. We try to limit public testimony to 3 minutes, so keep it as close to that as you can. And we have some new guidelines that our board is hopefully going to vote on today about public comment. We're just trying to keep it a little bit more in line with how the county council does it, because we've been calling on people from the audience to speak often, but none of that audio is recorded on the record very well. Now we're going to keep people kind of one at a time up to the table, keeping testimony as close to 3 minutes as possible. We're not going to call on people from the crowd anymore throughout the meeting for questions or comments, with the caveat that several of us stay a little bit after the meeting, and you can come up and chat with us with your questions or concerns, or we have an email address. You can email us that, and we will get you the answers to whatever your questions are from that. So, with that being said...
Does anybody want to add their name to the public speaking?
Nope.
Okay.
Okay. Emily.
All right. Well, my name's Emily Waters, and I grew up in Clark County. I've spent many hours at our parks, and the Lewis River is my favorite because of all the parks around it: Lewisville, Daybreak, Moulton Falls. And I'm here today to talk about the proposed logging at Moulton Falls, and urge you to work with Clark County Council and the Department of Natural Resources to protect the character of the Moulton Falls, Lucia Falls Regional Complex. The Clark County Parks Advisory Board vision and mission statements both talk about the importance of parks for community health and environmental stewardship, and protecting the forest along the Hantwick Trail from logging is a perfect opportunity to do just that. I have heard some concerns raised about maintenance costs, but I would argue that allowing the sale to move forward would actually increase the time spent on maintenance, as slides impacting the trail would be more likely to occur. We already have regular slides that occur on the trail. Just this winter, there were 3 slides that closed the trail temporarily while the county had to remove debris. So if you're going to log the area above the trail that's already on a steep slope, you're just going to have more slides. There are many other reasons to support protecting this area, as you may already know, but for the sake of keeping my statement short, I will end by quoting the mission statement of the Parks Advisory Board, which is meeting community needs by providing an interconnected system of parks, trails, recreation facilities, and natural areas that support environmental stewardship, diverse recreational opportunities, and economic development. And protecting Moulton Falls easily checks off all of these boxes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there somewhere I can leave my written testimony?
Yeah, I can grab it from you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Fred?
Hello, my name is Fred Suter. I'm a longtime Clark County resident and a member of the Sierra Club. And there are approximately 2,000 members of the Sierra Club in Clark County. I'm hearing that the Washington State Department of Natural Resources has proposed a clear-cut timber sale on the land adjacent to the Moulton Falls Trail. I think this is a bad idea. According to 2018 Clark County records, there are 480,000 people living in Clark County. The Outdoor Industry Association states that 72% of Washington residents participate in some form of outdoor recreational activity. or 345,000 Clark County residents. I'm not suggesting that they all go to Lucia Falls, the Moulton Falls Regional Park, but I am suggesting that it's an important activity for Clark County residents. I discovered that the Moulton Falls Trail is a well-publicized and well-known destination. Local newspapers such as the Columbian and Reflector have carried articles about Moulton Falls and the trail. The publication Living in the Couve has a two-page spread listing hiking Lucia Falls and Moulton Falls as a daycation. And the Moulton Falls and the trail is mentioned in a number of internet websites such as visit VancouverUSA.com, Washington Trails Association. The Clark County website lists the Moulton Falls Regional Park and 5 or 10 more, including Welp Trail Advisors and Moulton Falls Winery. The Visit Vancouver USA website describes the Moulton Falls Park as a 387-acre park at the confluence of the East Fork of the Lewis River and Big Tree Creek. And it features two waterfalls, a wooden arch bridge. It's heavily forested on both sides of the river, and the Moulton Falls Trail guides hikers of all levels 4 miles out and back along the river. The Clark County website states that the park sits on both sides of the river and is heavily forested. And the All Trails website, as of May 30th, 2019. Okay, it's not mine. It's not mine.
That's 3 minutes.
Okay. Oh, that was 3 minutes. Okay. The All Trails website listed 346 favorable 4 or 5 star reviews of the trail and the park. The park has a well-documented and well-established expectation of what this wonderful regional county park provides. Given the value of the resource such as this that is accessible to all of the public, Clark County should do everything in its power to ensure its citizens can fully enjoy the priceless benefits this park has to offer. Clear cutting all or even part would be a mistake. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. Virginia?
I have copies. My name is Virginia Nugent, and I've lived in Clark County for over 50 years. I'm really very proud of our parks, especially Moulton Falls Park. So I'm here today to ask you to make Hantwick Trail and the 25 acres of Unit 1 a part of the Clark County Park System. It is adjacent to Moulton Falls Park, and it just makes common sense to put it under your protection. How many of you are familiar with Hantwick Trail and actually have been there? So you people have not. You have. Okay. Well, then those of you who haven't experienced that wonderful hike, it's so much a part of Moulton Falls Park already. I mean, when I found out it was not owned by the park system, I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. I was even more shocked when I found out the DNR is going to log that steep slope on the south side. So the DNR is talking about a 200-foot buffer or beautification zone. It's just not sufficient to hide the devastation of a clear cut. A DNR employee told me that this buffer zone would hide the logged off area and that, quote, a person walking the trail would never know what was behind it, unquote. Well, I totally disagree, because the towering Douglas fir trees can easily be seen from the trail. They are a part of the beauty of this trail, and without them, I think the beauty would be destroyed. So the DNR has plenty of other areas that it can log. It doesn't need to ruin our recreational trails. Logging this trail will not only destroy the beauty above the ground, it will also destroy something extremely important underground. There is a massive, complex fungal system that scientists call a mycorrhizal network. This fungal system allows the plants and trees to share water and exchange nutrients. The plants and trees are so interconnected that it's akin to one living organism. And removing the Douglas fir trees will damage this fungal system, threatening the health of the whole ecosystem and the remaining trees and plants. Research has shown that actually the Douglas fir tree and the largely maple tree have a very special connection, and they depend on each other. So if the Douglas fir is removed, it will have a detrimental effect on the beautiful maple trees lining the trail. Several hundred people have signed our petition. The following groups all want Hand Creek Trail to be protected from logging. They are Lewitt Sierra Club, Vancouver Chapter of the Audubon Society, Northwest Chapter Trout Unlimited, Clark Skamania Fly Fishers, Cascade Volcanoes Chapter of Great Broads for Wilderness, Friends of the East Fork, and Friends of Clark County. Knowing that the request to add Hand Creek Trail and all of Unit 1 to the existing Moton Falls Park has widespread community support, I respectfully ask that you give this strong consideration. And I have submitted my contact information and would like to be informed of any information regarding Hand Creek Trail and your decision. Thank you.
Thank you.
I interrupt with a couple quick questions.
Yes.
Unit 1 is the proposed logging area.
Yes, it's 25 acres.
I was thinking
acres.
It was bigger than that. Is it just 25 acres?
25 acres is the area that's remaining after the 200-foot buffer.
Okay.
And the section of Clark County already owns within that.
Right. So we own that 25 acres?
No, we own a small wedge that's about 8 or 9 acres.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
Surrounded by the larger unit. Okay. The total unit is about 60, I think.
That sounds more like what I was thinking. Okay, cool, thanks.
So Kevin, is above us now. This is the county council level at this point?
Yeah, I was going to give you guys an update on this later, but we can address it now.
That
if
would
you
be
like.
Great, yeah.
Sure. Now, well, should we finish comment first?
Let's do that. Okay. But if these folks want to go somewhere, I want to get to it after this, so we'll move that up. Okay, thank you. So we'll have Tyler and Susie come testify about Whipple Creek. Already?
I can do our presentation. This is for on the agenda. We can make it go out.
Oh, you sure? Okay,
so
perfect.
Yeah, let's
okay,
do that.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay, and then Lisa. I don't even try to say the last names because I don't want to offend anyone when I'm mispronouncing them.
If we were in France, we'd say Bayouche, but so thank you. I just wrote a notation that I wanted to talk about park attendance in general, and I just really have an observation rather than specific comments. And it's probably best to tell specific location, but I am seeing this. I like to visit the parks and go in. But specifically this last week, I've had a number of observations at Hazeldale Park. The parking lot is full, and, you know, I love your picture here of this is how parks should look, with people all over the place. And so when I saw this, I thought, wow, that's great. And I'm going to pass my phone around so you can see. And the reason why I walked into the picnic shelter, in all honesty, is that I thought somebody was getting ready to have a picnic and they might have a cup because it was a hot day and I wanted to give my dog some water. And when I walked up, I saw it's a food box, which I thought, oh, okay, this is interesting. So I started paying a little closer attention, and this last week there were also boxes of clothing. And just this morning, no adults out. The maintenance guys were out working, and I thought it was odd at first. I thought, wow, bring your kids to work. There were two young children in their pajamas, one with no shoes. No parents to be found, but obviously the maintenance workers felt a little compelled. And so, again, it's an observation. The parking lot looks full, but then there's no activity, and I don't want to be judgmental of people at all. I don't like that. But I'm kind of just wondering, you know, maybe I should be for parking fees. You know, maybe they're not appropriate places, you know, for other people. But who's leaving these items? I don't know how I feel about that either, if it's appropriate to leave food or clothing out. And certainly unsupervised children, I think, okay, when are the attorneys going to start hanging out there waiting for somebody to say that somebody did something, you know, inappropriate to their child and there's, you know, no witnesses except the person out there trying to enjoy the park. So, again, I just wanted to make a comment. I'm not sure that I have any offer beyond that, but I want to make you aware. And I have seen some of this, you know, in some of the other parks. But I just thought you should know and be watchful. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Okay. Do we want to do a Whipple Creek? Not Whipple Creek. Sorry. So many falls and creeks. Molten.
Yeah.
Cantwick Trail.
Yeah, I can give an update.
That would be great.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, I think the last time we talked about this, we had mentioned that the county put forward a trust land transfer proposal to the state. It was in review by the legislature, amongst several other trust land transfer processes or projects, and that would have included the 200-foot buffer along the trail itself, and then all of the property north of the trail to the property line would have come to Clark County, a total of, I want to say, about 35 acres. And that trust land transfer did not move forward in the legislative process, so it's officially dead as of right now. Since that time, Councilor Temple Lentz, asked me to participate in a phone conference call with members of Department of Natural Resources and members of several of the people mentioned by Virginia, those interested groups, and a discussion around looking at different ideas for how to get Moulton Falls, the whole of Unit 1, to Clark County. It was a good discussion. There were lots of great ideas. Some of those ideas included another trust land transfer application, which likely wouldn't be until 2021, so 2 years from now when they go through the legislative process again to do the two-year capital budget for the state. Looking at purchasing it outright, so the county could purchase it outright, and how would we go about doing that? Looking at conservation futures as a funding source for it. Looking at a land trade. So we've been asked to look at what other forested properties does the county have that potentially the Department of Natural Resources might be interested in, so we could trade. And then the last option that somebody brought up, and I don't remember who it was that brought this up, but the state is looking into this as an option. It's called a reconveyance. So the state manages two types of properties. One is called the Common School Trust, and the other one is the Common Trust, State Trust. Those were properties that were formerly in county ownership, but early on in statehood, the counties were not able to manage them, so they gave them to the state to manage. So for those properties, the estate trust properties, we can potentially request a reconveyance, and the property would come back to the county to own and manage. And what happens when that, if that were, what happens in that situation is when the Department of Natural Resources stops managing it, revenues from timber management, forest management, no longer come to the county, and it's junior taxing districts. So then only the county can manage it. If the county doesn't manage it for forest, then that revenue source is lost for the county and the junior taxing districts. So that's a potential option. The only problem here is that the property that is at the Moulton Falls and proposed for timber harvest is school trust, so therefore not available for reconveyance. So they talked about the possibility of an inter-fund transfer, I think is what they called it. So you would, or a trade. So within DNR, they would trade lands between the common and the school trust. So between the two trusts, and then we could potentially request the reconveyance. So again, complicated process. State's looking into if that's even a possibility, and they need to work it through all of their upper management, but also make sure that school boards are on, you know, okay with this, because they would potentially be affected by that swap.
And what's the logging schedule right now?
So that has been put on hold for at least a year while we talk through this, you know, possible attempt at getting the property to the county. Since that time, county council, and I just got this yesterday, actually, the policy analyst for council, Lindsay Schaefer, sent a letter from our council, signed by, I think it had all five members of the council on it. All five had signed it, a letter to the DNR saying we are interested in pursuing options for transferring that property to the county. We want to continue to work towards that. So that's the council's position on it right now, and we're still evaluating some of those options, like our Conservation Futures possible funding source, inter-fund or inter-trust transfer or trade that DNR talked about. So those are some of the options that are out there and where we currently are. Yeah. Any questions?
Yeah. There's a couple things I think we ought to be doing, and one is we ought to be showing ourselves, we ought to see a map that shows countywide what properties are ours, which are the school trust lands, and which ones are the other trust lands.
Yeah.
And so we understand all this, because it's very complex. And
it is.
Just trying to hear from you right now, you realize how complicated it is. And I know I dealt with it years ago, and it just gets mind-boggling unless you can visualize something. So I'd like to see a map, and that's why I carry this around with me most of the time, just to try to follow through all this stuff. But the other thing, the state has an election coming up with a elected official who runs DNR, and anybody should be finding out who's running DNR. So that's a political thing that we won't get into, but it does make a difference if the wrong person gets elected. So that should happen on the individual basis. And lastly, I think we ought to understand that these loggings are under a great deal of pressure from our school systems, especially the universities, because that's how they survive. And while we think we might have some say in this matter, the universities are very, very powerful. So it's an uphill battle to win these. And I think today's testimony here was as professional as I've seen, and I hope this continues this way.
Okay. Should we vote on if we want to pursue these public comment guidelines now, or should we circle back to
I think we need to know more information.
Oh, about these.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Moving on.
Sorry. Moving on from public comment, okay. Do we want to vote on the new public comment guidelines?
Yes.
This is the first trial run of them. So thanks for coming to testify, everyone. All right. Do we have a motion?
So I move that we accept the public comment guidelines as documented in the guidelines. Well, in the guidelines.
Just discussion about before we vote. Mm-hmm. Were the guests today given this in advance so they knew and showed us how they?
Yeah.
Thought it was a textbook example of the way to do it.
Yeah.
So yes.
I appreciate that a lot.
And yeah, and this kind of came. We've been talking about this for a little bit. The flow of our meetings. And then we feel bad if we don't have time to call on someone, and we called on someone 10 minutes before that, and it just felt kind of like unfair how we were arbitrarily, yeah, we have time for you, but not you.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
This kind of streamlines it, and again, we'll be here. Some of us are usually lingering after if you had something to say in the meeting you want to touch bases.
And this will be up on our website. Yes.
Okay. One additional thought on this. I'm good with those guidelines. Something we do at the port is we actually have two public comment periods. One that happens at the beginning and one that happens at the end. Mm-hmm. So that people can say, hey, here's what I think about what's coming up.
Yeah.
And you dirty rat bastard, you didn't vote for me. So.
I don't dislike that.
I'm fine with that.
It would probably be better because if somebody comes to me with that rat bastard thing, and I don't share it with all of you, but they felt like they made it clear, then I've done a good service for us. So I guess I'd agree with what you say.
So if somebody wants to amend the motion, I'm all for that. So.
I think you ought to amend the motion.
Yeah.
Let's keep it simple and do two motions.
Okay.
So it's been moved. I'll second.
You'll second the guidelines?
So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed?
Nay. Nay opposed.
And I'll also move that we add an additional public comment section, thinking probably after the manager's report, before a roundtable.
So it would become number 5 on these steps and number...
No, it would become number 7 on the...
I'm looking at... this is what we're kind of voting on. So,
So that we've approved. I'm just...
Well, I'm just trying to... You're amending that, aren't you?
No,
it's second.
I made it easy by making two different motions.
I know, but I thought it was still on this issue.
No. Okay. Sorry.
I'll second John's amendment. Or new motion.
I want a clarification. Restated.
Okay.
Yes. So we've approved the public comment guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
My motion is simply to add a secondary public comment period to our agenda after the manager's report.
Then I will add to that we make it step 5 of this particular document we just approved and have set step 6.
Oh, just that says that. Yeah. I see where you're coming from.
So you would like the guidelines to state, maybe just a statement.
Number 5 would be you have the opportunity to speak again at the end of the meeting, as agenda permits.
Right.
And then number 6 would be parks, board members would also be a reachable idea.
Okay.
So are we good with how it's stated? Never mind, we're not. Dave?
You don't have anywhere on here that says that they talk first either. I just think we can base it all off of agenda because manager's report doesn't always have to be last either.
That's true.
That's true.
Okay. So say it again, John.
For that matter, to his point, we really don't even need a motion. You guys can just add it to the agenda.
Yeah, we can just add it.
Let's do that. Add it to the agenda.
I retract my motion.
All right. A statement should be made on the guidelines that says, please see the agenda for the public comment period.
Perfect. Let's do that.
Okay.
That'll work.
Let's pass this thing. We passed it, right?
Because
we've gone back and forth 10 times. We're good?
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Thanks to Laura I gave her a very clunky draft of this, and she made it into something much better. So thanks, Laura.
So you'll get the new one out for you.
Don't have it sooner than that. Yeah.
She's so speedy. Let's review the minutes from last month.
I have a motion on that to modify the date to 2019. For some reason, I had 2018.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in the first one.
Action item.
You mean we didn't meet a year ago?
So. I'll second Dave's typo correction. All in favor of fixing it?
Move to approve with changes.
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, the minutes are approved. This is your reminder, and this would be I've been remiss in not introducing Stacy, our new member. She's here for her first meeting. So this is all probably just like what? that's how I felt my first one. I'll get up to speed pretty quickly. So we document how many hours we spend a month working on the Parks Advisory Board. So this is our reminder to tell everyone, emails, meetings, this meeting, anything having to do with your role here, we document and we send to Karen. We can get you her email, and we'll get you the form, who's the volunteer coordinator, because our hours can be used to help get matching grants. Or
you can just log in and fill it out.
Every time I try to, Dave, it's like
he's the only one that can
do it every month.
Mine spews this weird, like, acrylic, like, info at me and won't let me do it. I don't either. I'll ask again. So anyway, we can do it on paper. We can do it on a spreadsheet. Dave is the only one who can access the online login, apparently. So this is kind of our reminder. I haven't done it for 2 months. But I document it on my Google Calendar, so I will go back and fix all that. Park Standards Subcommittee update. Most of our board was here. We just want to give a rough... We're moving forward with our first topic, which would be next month. What day is that, our meeting? Our July meeting. Sounds good. It's the 15th. Okay.
Which is it? The 12th?
It's the 12th, though, actually, right. Is what my calendar says.
It's the 12th.
Yeah. It's okay. So on the 12th, we'll meet an hour early again to discuss kind of a subcommittee workshop session of park standards and what we want to see parks looking like in the future, and so the first topic will be what is a park and what are sort of our ideas moving forward for the next post plan. So we're good there. The DEEB subcommittee, you want to do that one?
Sure.
That's a workshop or work session?
We have a county work session with the counselors the 26th, yes. I believe. So all the material is going in. The material that's going in today is roughly, we have formed a subcommittee, we being the PAB, DEEB formed a subcommittee. We met several times, came up with three categories of information. One is the ones we agree on, the ones we don't agree on, the ones they want to see, DEEB wants to see. Predominantly based around, there was, the DEEB had raised the issue that they were not getting credit, PIF credits for what they were developing. So that's, it all ties into the PROS plan coming up. So what we're trying to do is work with DEEB to come up with the information that we all agree on how to get PIF, how to use the credits, and then we'll put it in the PROS plan so that the development community and the parks community can move forward with an understanding of how we'll interact on development. That criteria or that discussion is going in front of the councilors or during work session on the 26th. So that's where we are right now. So sorry about the slow start, but I think I figured it out.
You did it. And the public is welcome to come. So,
right.
And hopefully some of our board members.
I think it's 10:45 to 11:15. I think it's 30 minutes on the 26th. It'll be on their agenda.
What do you think?
It's 10:15 to 10:45.
10:15 to 10:45.
June 26th?
What will be the goal of this particular work session?
The goal of this particular work session is to talk, make sure the counselors understand we're working together,
mm-hmm.
and we're moving forward together, and that there is a plan to incorporate, you know, through the PROS plan and everything. Because it was, we were all talking to the counselors individually on, you know, two different streams, and so we've worked together to kind of come up. And we've been honest with each other. There are some things we agree on. And there's some things we don't agree on.
And some now, things that we disagree
completely on.
Completely,
so,
yeah, okay.
And we'll have to move, as we move forward, we'll have to work that out and as well as we can.
Will we see something back from them that tells us we're off base or they're off base? Or
I don't know.
From council?
Yeah.
We'll just get whatever questions raised during the work session.
They asked how things were going, how is this being resolved? Because they, you know, the development is quite active, as we all know, right now in Clark County, and so the counselors were getting lots of input, and they wanted to get, you know, they wanted to get where we are, just understand where we are, with the development of information.
But it would be part for us to know where they're at too.
That's part of it too.
And I'm hoping we get some of that feedback.
That's why I asked the question.
Yeah, to kind of hear where.
I think we will. I think we'll, when we're done talking about what the work that was done between the two subcommittees, I think there's going to be a discussion on next steps. I will talk about, or you guys can talk about, what we've been doing since that subcommittee stopped meeting. We're working on park standards. We know that the PROS plan needs to be completed. An update to it needs to be completed by the end of 2021, I think September. So we have from now until then to work all of this out, and we're starting to take steps in that
really
direction.
We really have until about the first of 2020, end of 2020, to work that out so we can get
right.
on together.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Member vacancy, I kind of spilled. Stacy's here.
That's right.
Do you want to take this opportunity for you to give us a little of your background and who you are?
Rundown.
Yeah.
Well, right now, I'm a stay-at-home mom. Up until last fall, for the last 5 years, I've been working for Olson Engineering. I'm a licensed landscape architect. I was doing land use planning work, primarily for Olson, big subdivisions, that kind of thing. So I'm familiar with that process. Prior to 5 years ago, actually 6 years ago now, I lived in Eastern Washington, where I worked for a large landscape design builder in capacity as a landscape architect.
Where Eastern Washington?
Spokane. Yeah. Yeah. So we did a lot of work in Northern Idaho, Spokane. Large scale residential, a lot of commercial work, so I'm familiar with the construction process as well. So that's my professional background.
I just looked you up on Facebook and we have lots of mutual friends.
Oh. So Kelly already Facebook stalked you.
Just had to do
nice.
It.
Yeah. It's 2019.
Yeah, right. She's talking to me, but I already know. Well,
he's checking if I was lying.
Yeah, right. He's checking up on your cred. Well, we're so excited to have you. We've had this vacancy for a very long time, and we definitely are appreciative of you choosing to spend your free time here. All right. I saw Monica. Hello. Are you ready? All right. I'll move because my head's always awkwardly in.
Yeah. Where? Stay right there. I need to get up. Well, we need to get the PowerPoint
up. Yeah, I guess we need to get out.
Meant
after that.
Seems to be going as slow as my organization's doing.
I hope people all had a chance to go and enjoy the pier, the park. It's lovely, isn't it?
Okay. I'm Monica Tuberville with the Vancouver Parks Recreation Department, and thank you for inviting me back to talk about the park overlay service areas. We talked about this a couple times, so I'll just give you a real simple overview of it, and then we'll address the specific questions that Kevin shared with me that we could look at. So, the overlay service areas simply just recognize that there's a concentration of unserved areas along our common boundaries between the City of Vancouver and Clark County and the City of Camas. It simply creates the option for us to buy and develop parks outside of the city limits within delineated service areas and based on specific best practices criteria. The current regulations are generally unclear about whether or not we have the authority to do this. It addresses that we need to do this within service areas. The service areas in our technical document defines that as the park districts. When we were the Vancouver-Clark Interlocal, we did this as commonplace. We purchased inside the city, outside the city, and outside the UGA. But it's just unclear, so this is an opportunity for us to clarify that. These are areas where we believe that it would be utilized when this area may be otherwise totally unserved because there is no alternative within the city. So I would say that it's not going to happen often, but it does give us the option. The overlay service areas do not create new park districts. The city park impact fees would not be collected outside the city, and these overlays would not in any way impact our rates or yours for that matter. The concept goes both ways, meaning that if we do this and we enter into these cross-boundary agreements, it gives you the opportunity to do the same inside the city if you so chose, or the City of Camas could do the same. The cross-boundary agreement specifically just underscores the desire for the jurisdictions to partner together, to leverage our resources, and just to coordinate our planning, which I think we all have the desire to do. We've done historically quite well. These types of relationships and partnerships are pretty foundational to what we have done for decades. If we chose to enter into a project agreement where we define responsibilities, whether it be maintenance and operations, or one jurisdiction builds this or that, or who pays for what portions of an acquisition, that would be a project-specific agreement that is separate and apart from any of this. And we've done those as well in the past. Right? This is just a simplified map of these overlay areas. The green represents the half-mile service area from all city, county, City of Camas, City of Vancouver park ownerships. Doesn't mean that all of those park ownerships are built, but the green represents areas that are technically served based on the half-mile service area that is in our comprehensive plan. So any acquisition would be targeted outside of the already served areas. The overlays represent a mile and a half radius outside the city of Vancouver, which represents our service area for a community park. I don't know that we would ever go that far out of the city, but it seemed like a reasonable technical standard that we would never go more than that. Meaning that if we purchase something just outside the city, right on that line, it still serves a mile and a half in the city, and it would serve a mile and a half out of the city. So the overlays define where we could do this, and then there are specific criteria listed in our PIF technical document, or would be, that defines when we could do it. That being that we need to define that there is a defined deficit based on our standards. The project area is identified in the capital facilities plan. The project would serve city residents, and that opportunity equals or exceeds anything that we could do within the city, and that all partnerships have been explored. So these are the questions that Kevin shared with me, so we can just go through them one at a time, and it certainly may not be all of them, and we can just add to this list as we go on. So would the overlay service areas change the calculation area? I assume that meant the park district, correct? Was that?
It means in your calculation for your service area. Are we counting mile and a half into your, you know, district for our counts, and you go, are we double dipping, basically?
Double dipping in the fee?
Yeah.
So it's
in your calculation.
The service area does not affect the fee at all.
Okay.
Other than, let me just clarify that. The service area in the definition of the park district, the fee is based on the cost of land within that district. And the cost of development is the same across the city. Yeah. And I assume it's the district line, not the overlay. Correct. Okay.
So, but potentially it would, you purchasing a property in the county and then developing it would relieve the need for us to
serve that area.
Serve that area.
Correct.
Okay.
So it would change your level of service. It would not change your standard. It would not affect your fees. Right. It would not change your service areas.
I'm probably going too deep in the woods, and it probably doesn't matter. Prices within the city limits are generally going to be higher. If you're now able to buy land outside of the city limits, which is lower, does that matter?
It could matter, and I say it could if our fees were based on what it actually cost us in the city.
Right.
Our fees that we're proposing are significantly below that, so it potentially over time could, yes, but it probably balances out over time. So have I answered that question, do you believe? Okay, so I would also say then we've answered whether or not it would affect the PIF rates. Does it affect the inventory calculation? So again, it does influence your level of service. I would say if the city had a park right on that boundary, we would count it in our inventory, and therefore it would affect our level of service, and it would be your option if you did the same. I don't know why you wouldn't, but that would be your option.
We'd be foolish not to.
I wouldn't use that word.
Well, we can.
Okay. Whether or not we have projects in mind, there is a project that is what originally started this conversation 5 years ago. It is not in the county. It is in the city of Camas. And I'm not free to discuss that because the negotiations have not begun. But there is a project in mind at this point that we will initiate conversation as soon as this is approved, if it's approved.
Do you visualize, if that moves forward, it being a collaborative effort in terms of funding and design? And
absolutely. Yeah, we did meet with the city of Camas 2 or 3 weeks ago for the second time, and they are very supportive of this concept and that potential project.
Okay.
And we've also met with Bill in the past about this project as well.
With who?
With Bill. Examples of partnerships I'll touch on in just on the next slide, if I may. Maintenance funding on a future project. So if the city purchased a park just outside the city limits and we did not enter into a project-specific agreement with Clark County, the maintenance would be entirely our responsibility through whatever funding source, typically general fund for us. If we entered into a specific agreement with the county, who does what and who finances what is on the table for conversation. So there would be, for us to pursue this independently would not obligate the county to any financial considerations. And we do not have any annexations on the table. What I hear repeatedly is that the city is not pursuing any annexations that are not at the request of a property owner. So there is no anticipated large area annexation at this point. Are there any other questions before I move on to some examples?
Who manages our parks district outside the urban park district that we developed a few years ago?
We manage everything outside of city limits.
But do we manage the planning of that document? That it's almost a little agency is what it is.
Are you referring to the Greater Clark Park?
Yeah.
So that, I think, is folded into the PROS plan now. Essentially.
Okay. That's all.
Yeah.
I have two additional questions.
Sure.
On funding, as far as purchasing, do you guys still have a TIF fund balance for acquisition only, or are you all combined now, acquisition and development?
The park impact fee accounts have been combined.
Your past ones also?
Yes, because there's no RCW requirement for them to be separated. And in the city, it was purely a policy-driven thing, so it did not even require that they be spent that way.
So, okay. So, I live in the peninsula, you could say, where this would definitely affect. So, the way I view it is I have two undeveloped city parks next to my house, within a mile, that are essentially, potentially, put on back burners so we can reach further and purchase more properties outside of the city. Honestly, our neighborhood, it doesn't leave a good taste.
Are you referring to the peninsula? Are you referring to the annexation area?
Schaefer, yeah, Kelly Meadows.
Okay. The primary goal right now is for us to pursue Stronger Vancouver, which gives us a funding source outside of the park impact fees to do some of that deficit funding. Schaefer is on that list for full development. Kelly Meadows is not. But there's not enough money in that proposal. If it was approved by the public, ultimately it will have to be for us to pursue that. But we did it based on distribution, trying to make sure all neighborhoods had a developed park as best we could.
Second question. I had heard, I don't remember who it was in here last month, there was a comment about how we would be reviewing these individual projects, but there is no review on our side. Once this is approved, you go and you just purchase the property or whatever, unless you want some kind of agreement with us, right? We're not reviewing every project and approving anything.
Not technically, but if we were interested in doing an acquisition outside the city limits, I can assure you we will be meeting with Kevin and then coming to you. If we have a purchase and sale agreement, or we're close to that point, we would probably be talking to you just so you were aware, and then at least consider whether or not you were interested in a project-specific agreement.
Could the agreement between the city and the county include language that essentially requires that?
Because that was what was implied by whoever mentioned it, and that's not what it says.
It's worth talking about.
It's worth talking
about. I mean, it's red tape, but yeah, I heard that last month, and that's not what I read when I read that draft. So
the city owns property in the county.
Right.
And the county owns property in the city.
Right. If
you were not interested in participating in an agreement, would you oppose the county spending money to buy or build a park that would serve city and county residents? So I'm not sure that there would be a reason to oppose it. I'm not really opposed to asking for your input, but it doesn't necessarily.
I think in the spirit of partnership, it would be to make sure that one or the other doesn't already have plans in that same vicinity, so we're not trying to serve two needs at the same time.
Absolutely, and that should just be an ongoing conversation. Yeah.
That's where my question was coming into who manages the.
So you mentioned earlier that in the past we used to do stuff like this just as a matter of principle. So is Curtain Creek Park an example of that? Because that's owned by the city, but we have an agreement where the county will develop and maintain it.
Correct.
Yeah. So it could be, we could theoretically envision projects of that nature.
Correct.
The city has money to buy it, the county has money to develop it, we enter into an agreement to work together to do something like that.
Which is a great segue to the next slide. So this is kind of a messy map, but I tried to just circle some examples of past partnerships where we have worked with Clark County or DNR or the school districts, private parties, etc. And just to restate it, the interlocal agreement between the city and the county is the most obvious example of how we have interplayed the park impact fees in and out of the city. So when we had 10 park districts, there were multiple districts in that agreement that were shared. Part of it was in the city and part of it was in the county. And it didn't matter whether the money was collected in the city or the county in that shared district. The money was spent in the district. So those are prime examples of how we used the money in a cooperative way. Likewise, Hawkinson is another example where park impact fees from city and county were used to purchase a community park completely outside of the UGA, which set a precedent of its own. So if I can just keep moving down, just south of Hawkinson is Fenton. Fenton is the property that the county just provided us a Conservation Futures grant to assist in the acquisition. State money, ideally, in the long term, will participate in that as well. That serves a good share of the county as well as the city. And whether or not we enter into an agreement for future development is entirely up to the county and the city to discuss. South of there, Pacific, it's a county park enjoyed just as much by city residents. But it was paid for again by city and county when we were with Vancouver Clark. There are multiple sites circled there that are the beneficiaries of Conservation Futures, including Eastville Lake and Menzie Marsh. A good share of Burnt Ridge Creek drainage basin was in part funded through the county and enjoyed by residents of both jurisdictions. Orchards Park is an example of one, again, that's on the boundary, enjoyed by both jurisdiction residents. And Waterfront Park, we don't have a gate saying that only city residents can enjoy Waterfront Park. And Vancouver Lake Lowlands is also one that was funded in part through Conservation Futures. Frenchman's Bar and Vancouver Lake are obviously county ownerships within city jurisdiction. There, to my knowledge, there is no agreement of any kind. It's owned and operated and maintained exclusively by the county.
See, and this is an example of my issue with it, is if right there I live by Kelly Meadows, and I know Hawkinson's more than a mile and a half out, but if, as a city resident, if the city went and purchased a property outside that's not serving us, I'd be pissed. And it's basically just kicking our can down the road while we're going and, you know, spending money outside.
Well, I would defer you back to the map that shows they would only be targeted in areas that are entirely unserved. We would not be buying something within the entire service area of Kelly Meadows already.
But the funds are for that entire I-5/205. So the funds that are taking away from that development are going to acquisition even further away.
And you're correct. I would say, though, to be honest, if you don't buy the land when the land is available, there will not be an opportunity in the future.
True.
So that is a constant balancing act.
Yep.
And next slide, please. These are just other examples of interagency partnerships. This represents the Vancouver Water Service District that serves a very large area outside of the city. The next one, I believe, is the sewer district doing the same. The sewer districts crisscross the boundary lines irrespective of jurisdiction. And the last one is just another example of the Vancouver Fire Department serving extensively out of the city. There are three fire stations that serve across the jurisdictional boundary. So that concludes all the questions that I have. Megan, I think there was one more slide. There should have been. There. Oh. This is the second time this has happened to me. They say it might be a corruption in the file. But so I just wanted to go through the schedule with you. So we met. Oh, there it is. It is there. Oh, interesting. So as I said, that we did meet with CAMAS, and we go to their Parks Advisory Board on June 28th. We have a public hearing with our Planning Commission on the 23rd to discuss the overlays, and then we begin the conversation with Council. We have had one work session with them prior, but this will be focused just on the overlays in September. So that's our schedule for considering this overlay adoption. So again, if you have any other questions, and we look forward to...
Can we back up to the other shared parks map? Yeah, this one. This is just to keep us in mind of what is happening in the past. The people that live in the parks district pay on their property taxes a certain amount of money towards their property tax for the maintenance of parks. Mm-hmm. And that just has to be reminded, and that's why I asked the question, who manages that particular park district? Because it's an agency of its own, and it's wrapped into us, but those people are paying in their property tax to have a park maintained. If
if say you build a park in that in our district, it seems there's got to be some kind of a relationship there between people living there and them getting some of their money going in to maintain that park. I just want to know who and how that's happening.
I would, just for clarification, in the most recent annexation, the MPD money that
MPD, is, that's the word I wanted to use. Yeah.
Or GCPD, I think it's both. The money from the MPD did not transfer to the city for the maintenance of Kelly Meadows or anything within that district. That boundary line is static, short of a new ballot measure. And so the policy of the county at this point in time is not to transfer those funds upon annexation. And I also believe that in the MPD there are specific parks that are identified.
Right, they're
not
30.
Necessarily all of them.
Right.
But I don't know how it's being managed.
Well, that's just something we got to keep our mind and be focused on.
So, Monica, we've kicked this can down the road for you a couple times. Are you looking for a vote from us today?
I would, yes. Okay. I appreciate that. And if you have more questions, I'd love to answer them now.
Okay. Do we want to have a brief discussion on thoughts, feelings, proving this?
I think we should.
Okay.
I'm going to state my old common statement every time. It's too bad the divorce happened because there was a lot of good things going on before we split it up, and we wouldn't be dealing with these in such a confusing way today if we hadn't done that divorce. Now it's happened. We're moving forward, but we certainly could look at this whole issue in a broader perspective in some time in the future, and we should be doing that as part of our comprehensive planning. End of subject.
I'll say that no one cares who builds parks.
That's
no one
right.
even knows who builds parks. People don't understand if they're county parks, city parks. They just want a park. So I don't want to get hung up in the weeds of who provides that service. I just want to make sure moving forward we are working together and having a collaborative sort of relationship on it. And because I think, you know, I was kind of going back and forth with this, and my husband was like, why would you say no to the city building you a park? Like, and I'm like, yeah, why would I? And so I think that's kind of where I've come down with it. If we can serve the biggest group of citizens possible in these areas by allowing you to spend money there or us helping out with some of that, that's great. I do think there's a lot of details that need to be worked out and kinks, you know, when there is a project. I do totally hear Dave's concerns, and I totally get them. Having waited for my MPD park forever, I get the frustration of sitting next to an empty space of land that was supposed to be something and it not turning into something that you thought it would. But I don't think we can tell you as a city taxpayer can,
yeah.
But us as a board, I don't think it's up to us to tell Vancouver Parks how to prioritize their spending. I think that's something citizens like you and other people who are discouraged need to be telling them on. We're upset that there's all these properties and they're not being developed into parks. So I think that's us overstepping if we don't vote for this just based on that, because that's their sort of however their boards decided to move forward with that. So I think I'm definitely a yes vote at this point. Jay, you got thoughts?
I've got thoughts, but nothing that is any different than anybody else. I totally agree that it's too bad that we find ourselves in this situation, but we are in the situation. And so I think the best way to do is move forward, as long as we have an agreement that all parties involved understand their roles and responsibilities. So I'm all right with that.
I just have to say that despite the divorce, we still love you.
And I would like to have more regular planning conversations as well.
Totally.
Well, that was my point. I just hope we continue to move forward and even get closer than anything, because Dave's point is very valid.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think we got to take that off the table and make sure we're all working together.
All right, so I'll make a motion to approve the City of Vancouver's PIF cross-boundary proposal request. Does that sound nice? Okay.
Seconded
by Jay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Oh. All right. Well, thank you, Monica. Sorry it took us like 3 months, but we did it.
All right.
Thanks for coming again.
Let's talk about next steps with council when you have time.
Okay. Jane is here to do a nature play design presentation.
I'm going to suggest that there's multiple people from the Little Creek.
Oh.
Have them go first.
Are you sure?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Great. Okay.
Thank you.
So, Little Creek, the floor is yours. Hello.
It'll be actually Tyler Castle, not Anita Rose Will. So, Tyler Castle, current president of the Little Creek Restoration Committee.
Okay.
Anita Will is a co-founder of the Little Creek Restoration Committee. So, and actually I'm here, thank you to the PAB board and Kevin Tyler for setting this up. We are actually looking for the PAB's blessing on a project at Whipple Creek Regional Park, something we've been working on for, it's been on our radar and our project list since we adopted the park over 8 years ago. So I don't know if anyone's been to Whipple Creek Park? Mm-hmm. A few people have. What I've got is I was just going to play two videos that are professionally produced just to, you know, reintroduce you to the park. And the first one is a CCA TV video that was from 6 years ago. And that shows the point that how our length of commitment. We started working in the park in 2008. We got our Parks Foundation nonprofit in 2011. We're over 8,000 volunteer hours logged, and it's probably well over 10,000 now at this point, I'm sure. I mean, we had 250 there in April. So we've got a really, really strong commitment, and it's a big deal. This is going to be the next big park in the county. It really is. Over 350 acres. We've already got over 15 miles of trail, if we include our seasonal trails. And our usership is incredible. 2016 county numbers were at 45,000 visits, 2017, 54,000, 2018, 76,210, I believe is the number. So it's really, really growing. So there's one portion of the park, and this right here, this picture is the Day Hillborn Historic Mill Monument is what we're referring to it. Day Hillborn is a very, very famous architect in Clark County, probably the most famous architect in Clark County, arguably. And so he has his mark all over the county, and from Kiggins to the Clark County Courthouse and on. I mean, I've got a list of hundreds of projects, and if at any point anyone wants to look at his history and or he's a big deal. And so this mill was actually his kind of personal project through the 40s and 60s, and there's just pictures of it. When it was complete and or in various stages. This is a 1999 picture. This is what it looks like currently. The building is actually still very stable aside from one corner of it. Let's run the videos and we'll get on to the mill itself. Just love to get you familiarized and get your hearts wrapped around Whipple Creek Park. So we'll show the first video, which was this CCTV video, which is on the on Clark County's that's a picture of it. We'll get some audio.
I heard audio.
I'm gonna pause it for a second. Let me see if I can get the audio.
Oh, here we go.
There is a sound bar.
Again, this video is introduce you to reintroduce you to the park and show you how long we've been working at it.
The naturally forested setting is a mile west of Clark County Fairgrounds off of 179th Street. Whipple Creek Regional Park is different from most Clark County parks. It is undeveloped, so there are no bathrooms, no sports fields, no play equipment, just a mature, diverse forest, streams, trails, and a couple of historical remnants.
The park is just over 300 acres of land. The trail system is just over 4 miles. There's several loops that are really nice for joggers or for people riding horses. Whipple Creek runs through it. There's significant mature trees, a lot of really nice understory.
The county has since been incrementally acquiring land around Whipple Creek through the Legacy Lands program. Clark County Legacy Lands protect highly valued habitat areas while offering low-impact recreational opportunities. Most of the trails in the area were made long ago without the technical knowledge of trail building.
There's a lot of stables that border the park, so it's always been a place to ride your horse. And of course, if the trails are here, everybody hikes and bikes too. So we like to all use it. Everybody loves the park. So it's time to start repairing the trails.
A volunteer group, Whipple Creek Park Restoration Committee, stepped up to adopt the park and organize trail maintenance and enhancements.
We have really come to rely on our volunteers to do the work that's necessary there. Since 2011, I think the volunteers have donated over 3,500 volunteer hours. That's a lot of hours for one group to really be donating to one particular park.
Thanks to volunteers, improvements and realignments have made the trails safer. Many groups stepped up to help, including the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, schools, equestrians, bikers, and the Washington Trails Association. With their long-term goal of year-round use, the Restoration Committee recently received a $25,000 grant for materials to fix muddy areas on the southern end of the park. These were from funds set aside for future park improvements by three families that had sold 40 acres to the county to increase Whipple Creek Regional Park.
The funds, it really fits the original intent of the former landowners to help develop the park. It's great to have a volunteer group to step up and do that. In terms of creating the park that gives better access to the public to be able to utilize it, it's a beautiful place. It'd be nice to see more people be able to utilize it.
It's taken many, many hands to get as far as we have in the last 3 years. Also the trust fund, that being able to use that has really, really gave us a shot in the arm as far as getting things going. Everybody has chipped in on this park, and that's really the coolest part about it, is everybody's working together. Because it's our park.
Depending on the weather, the project could be completed by the end of the year. For their efforts to maintain and enhance trails for multiple uses, the Whipple Creek Park Restoration Committee and the volunteers that have helped improve public access to Whipple Creek Regional Park receive our personal best. To volunteer for the next work party at Whipple Creek Regional Park or another park in Clark County, go to parkhero.org to sign up.
And in the video, you saw a snapshot of the mill, the stone mill. Again, anyone who has been in Clark County or been around the historic side of it, even the talked about Dave Hilborn, again, Higgins, Clark County Courthouse. I mean, just numerous, hundreds and hundreds of buildings that he's had a hand at. The Historic Society just did a big special on him about 3 months ago. They devoted their entire meeting and a whole event to him. So, I mean, he's a big deal. And that mill site was a personal project of his, Stone Bridge, which is a large bridge that goes across Whipple Creek, and the mill that he built for himself and his family. They referred to in 1997, Kent Landerholm, they had donated money specific to the park and to the mill project. There was 40 acres that was came to the county through land trust, and again, the mill has always been a subject in the park, whether it be the 1992 master plan. There's talk of the mill in the master plan in 1992, as well as devoted talk to the mill in the 1997 Landerholm donation. So it's always been kind of on the radar for the park. The last video I was going to show was that first one was about 6 years ago. This last one is just from last year.
Whipple Creek Regional Park is a special place because it's beautiful, it's green, it just brings out the best in me. When I came back here, I was pretty upset that the trails were totally eroded. Then when I went over to the mill, it was really sad because there was a lot of graffiti. I knew then that I had to do something. And Whipple Creek Regional Park is actually an undeveloped park, but we adopted it.
When they came to us and asked if they could do some volunteer work in the parks, we said yes. And it has been one of the best relationships we've had. The thousands of hours, in fact, they probably about 8,000 volunteer hours that they spent to date. The Creek Restoration Committee came out and started introducing gravel trails.
Usually it consists of putting the rock into wheelbarrows, getting the rock to that particular part of the trail, and raking it out. Got the high school kids who run here every single day. We've got the search and rescue teams, both dogs and horses, that practice here, getting skills to save lives. We've got the veterans who do their therapeutic training here and ride here.
We have over 54,000 people using the park now. It's over 350 acres.
We gain about 10,000 users a year. The more use that the park gets, the more trails get beat down, the more there is a need for the whole entire community to keep the trails up to speed. And we really desperately need a piece of equipment that can get us there.
Having that skid steer will make a huge difference in the amount of work they can do. And, you know, I think they'll just be able to continue the efforts to really keep these trails maintained.
When nobody else cared about the park, Anita was here fixing it for people she didn't even know and for future generations.
Seeing other people use the park, coming in and enjoying it, is a real thrill.
I hope America considers voting for Anita. She's the kind of difference maker that we all need and we all should embrace.
My dream for this park is that my grandkids will have their grandkids here, and it will continue on. Sorry, I'm just a mess.
That's the last video. That was actually produced by John Deere North America. I wanted to show that because not only it's a beautiful video, but it shows our community support. Anita and the Whipple Creek Restoration Committee were one of three national finalists out of 367 qualified finalists to win a John Deere skid steer for either there was three finalists. They'd either win it or they get a 1 year lease. Well, we came in that second, third slot, and we won a 1 year lease for the skid steer last September, which we still have the skid steer. We use it at the park. We use it throughout the community. It just, again, it was not easily won. There were a lot of people who voted for that and supported us, and we got, to get. Even that year ago when that happened, and Bill's talking about 8,000 hours, and that's just the ones that were logged through Karen and the volunteer program, it's pretty significant what we've done. And so I like to say it's one of the more developed, undeveloped parks in the county. And we're really, really trying to embrace some of the things that you guys like to talk about, we're trying to preserve the park and its history. And so again, that's where we come to the mill. We've been working on this for about six years now. We started really working on it at least 8 years ago. We've got engineering plans. So the base of the building is a stone and wood construction building. The roof is gone, the windows are gone, the door is gone, but the stone structure is still solid. There's one corner of the building that has cracks. And in our speaking back and forth with the former Parks Director, Bill, we had talked about, okay, what can we do to salvage this building? It's a historic monument, and it's a gem that not every park in the county has, something so significant both historically and just aesthetically. So we've had an engineer come up with plans to stabilize the building. And the final question just before Bill left was how we would stabilize the one corner that was cracked. And we've talked to builders and engineers, and now we're talking about basically rebuilding that in a different way that he was satisfied with when he left. He's like, okay, now that sounds good. And it was, we all kind of came to this conclusion just prior to him leaving, so we really didn't, he wasn't here to look at it. And I know Kevin's looked at it a little bit. Everything is lining up right now. So we've come to you because you guys are responsible for trying to have the vision of the, what the parks are, and also as well as public funds being spent in the right manner. Well, currently, Whipple Creek Restoration has $29,000, over $29,000, in our Parks Foundation account. Currently, Whipple Creek Park has over $25,000 held in trust, the Columbia Land Trust, all of which could easily be earmarked for the mill, because the Columbia Land Trust money originally started at $75,000, and 50 of that has gone to trails and other things, permits and things like that. So it was always meant to be there. So who's on board with this? We're prepared. We have what's very rare, a stonemason who is completely qualified. That's really hard to find a stonemason to do that. Anybody can hammer nails, but to find a stonemason who's ready, who is ready to start working. We've got the engineering plans. I've got Dellen at Parks Foundation is ready to go. She says, okay, you've got the money. I just need to hear a yes from Clark County Parks, a yes from the advisory board. The same exact thing from Dan Royce at Columbia Land Trust. He says, okay, we got it. You can go ahead and have the Parks or the Parks Advisor, or excuse me, the Parks Foundation request the funds, and we'll transfer it over. No problem. What we're proposing is the first two phases of the building are basically all of the stonework and stabilizing of the entire building. The final third phase would be the wood shingle roof and windows and the water wheel. Phase one and two, the estimate is $26,000, and the builder is willing to let us, our volunteers, work in portions of the stage. We have the skid steer, which is going to, right now until September, which is going to also mitigate costs. Of our $29,000 in our Parks Foundation budget, my proposal is to take $13,000 of that and ask for and request $13,000 of the $25,000 CLT as matching funds, and which they love to see that. Hey, you got your own money, we'll match it, and that will easily cover phase one and phase two of the project. It's gonna, I have no problems foreseeing the project being finished. We actually probably have the money to do that, but what this is gonna do is gonna be our stepping stone for getting additional donations. It'll be super, super easy for skid donations. As far as any concerns with maintenance and upkeep, our 8,000 hours that Bill mentioned a year ago, we're committed to this park. Our committee is. We've been at it for over a decade now, and we've got a lot of good, young, strong backing, whether it be from the Skyview Cross Country, that's their home track. I mean, I've got those kids out there every month working at the park on the trails, which is great, gains personal ownership of the park and mitigates the whole vandalism thing. Actually, once they started working out there, the vandalism on that building stopped. At some point, we were getting, it quit being tagged. It's like, because it was their building. So, again, I think all I'm looking for is the same thing the county was looking for was, hey, if the Parks Advisory Board says, hey, this is, first of all, it's not going to cost the taxpayers any money, and it falls in the vision of what the county parks need to look like, then we could move forward.
So you don't need any money, you just need our blessing, essentially.
Exactly. Yep.
I see no problem with that. No, it ever comes just for blessings. any discussion?
No, he answered all my
questions. I know, it was, and so. Both videos made me cry, so. It's not on our agenda. Do we want to vote on? I don't
see why we wouldn't.
Not.
Yeah, pretty dang impressive.
Yeah, I mean,
this is going to be. You know, we're going to see more of each other. I know we will in the future. That park is going to be. It's going to be very, very important. Super important to me. to preserve the heart of the park. I mean, it's got so many unique features. The majority of the park was burned down in 1904 in the large Sarah fire. It is the perfect example of a naturally reforested park. It grew back on its own. I mean, just unbelievable history. There was one of the first small gauge railroads in the county was there doing logging. There's all kinds of stuff. So, yeah.
My only comment would be that as we go into next year and we start looking at the comprehensive plan, I think we, in the past 25 years, have really neglected our regional parks.
Mm-hmm.
And we've put so much effort into our neighborhood parks that we've just assumed the regional parks can take care of themselves. But whether it's this park or Moulton Falls or Lewisville Park, they're all going to need more attention, and hopefully we'll all be looking at all of them in the future. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I'll, how do to phrase this, move to support the Whipple Creek efforts, particularly on the mill, and further to
David's crinkling his eyebrow.
Sure, try it to come up. All right, we'll just stop there.
Okay. So you're making a motion to approve their efforts to move forward with the mill.
Yes.
Restoration of the mill.
Particularly the destruction.
Yes.
Okay.
Better said. Thank you.
Okay, it's been seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None opposed. Thank you for all the work you do. I mean, that's just outstanding.
Yes. Thank you, guys.
No, thank you. We should be thanking you.
Jay was second. Who was second?
Kelly.
Kelly.
Do you have to go?
I have to.
Okay, Jay is departing. I don't think we have any other unplanned. We've had so many unplanned votes today. It's been so exciting, guys.
We don't have any more votes.
I don't think so, unless something random
Sorry,
pops up.
Just
what?
Out somebody wired.
Oh, that's true.
The wrong.
Oh.
Okay. Now Jane is here to do her nature and play design. Thank you.
Hello. Thank you for this opportunity. I was asked by Jennifer Halleck to come speak with you guys about playgrounds and inclusive play, and I think nature play, and so hopefully I'm going to cover what you need, but if not, please let me know. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Jane Tessner-Kleiner. I'm a landscape architect. More landscape architects in the house. I'm an ecologist, environmental educator, mom, park advocate. I used to work for parks back when Kelly used to work for parks. We're the veterans here. So I just want to talk about some experiences I've had in perspective that I can bring for parks and playgrounds, because I think you were looking at bringing in another speaker to talk about what does inclusive play and nature play look like as you go through your PROs updates and that kind of thing. I'm so glad to hear that. Can you go to the next slide, please? So, as you all know, I'm sure you've seen many examples. Pinterest is loaded, our newspaper is loaded, with great examples of how park design has changed tremendously. And back when Kelly and I worked together, when the Greater Clarks Park District passed, and I was in at the very start of that process, and, you know, for equity's sake, right, we had to come up with what does a neighborhood park mean and look like, so that as we build these 35 parks, there was equity. Everybody was getting the basketball court or a skate park and a playground and this and that. And so, without it looking cookie cutter, we had to have some kind of formula for what a neighborhood park, a community park, a regional park look like. Well, park design has changed tremendously. Play research has changed tremendously. I'm a member of the Clark County, or the Children Nature Network with Richard Louvre and many others. I've participated in for 9 years with that organization, looking at how does play change and how do we need to rethink how playgrounds look for all people. And it's not just kids, because we have to have adults to get kids to the parks. We have to have people walk through these spaces with kids. And so everybody of every ability needs to go through these parks. And we also know that parks are not just for play. They are there for our well-being. Whether, you know, looking out a window at nature physically improves our health. The research is now there. Being in park, forest bathing, right, is now all the rage. So we know that we're not just attracting people to parks, you know, for their summer picnics and the graduation parties and little Andy's birthday party. There are so many benefits that we really do need to rethink how we look at parks. So I'm glad this conversation is coming up as you start updating your plan. Next slide, please. So when it comes to inclusive play, there are lots of, if you Google it, there's so many definitions, but generally, and this is one example from playground manufacturers, all the big representatives, including our local reps here, have taken this topic very seriously, as well as nature play. In formulating proactive measures to look at what does that mean to get everybody of every ability into a park, it's basically to address the needs that all people participate in successful play, whatever that means to them. Play to my 7-year-old is different than what play is to my 14-year-old, which is different than me and everybody here, right? So regardless of your abilities, and this is just one example of inclusive play, whether it's cognitive play, physical play, social interactions, behavioral management, sensory, communication. There's so many bubbles that could fit into that little blob there. But all of those things come into play when we go to visit our parks, our trails, our community centers. Next slide, please. And we want to move beyond what the codes and regulations say that limit us and limit our creativity and say, well, you know, the code says we just have to X, Y, Z, make the trail this wide or provide this many benches or not. And I was thinking back to Kelly, who's like, we need more benches on our trails. We do. Well, it wasn't written in code anywhere. It was because Kelly knew that when seniors walk down a path, when a mom with a stroller is going down the path, sometimes we need a place to sit. We all do. Tie your shoe or whatever. We have to look beyond the Department of Justice 2010 standards for outdoor recreation amenities looks like and do what we know is right. And when we go out and we observe our parks and how they're being used, we get a better sense of what those designs should incorporate. And once again, there's a ton of research now that supports what play really means and the benefits are from those activities. Next, please. And so when we look at the users, it's everybody. Back when I was at Parks, we had the very fortunate opportunity to work with Chuck Freyer, who was at the Forest Service at the time, to look at creating an ADA transition plan for the parks. And I assume that document is still an active live document for Clark County as well as the City of Vancouver. And when you look at accessibility for disabilities, physical is actually a small fraction of what inclusive means. I bet everybody in this room, if we did a secret count, there's sensory challenges within this room, maybe chronic health impairments, socio-emotional, cognitive communication of some level that makes it difficult for somebody to go into a park. If somebody comes to Luke Jensen on a Saturday when there's a soccer or baseball tournament, I can tell you that a lot of people that are visiting are having challenges because they can't handle the noise, the chaos, the heat, whatever. So we look at providing opportunities for all of those folks who come to the parks, whether they have to because they got to take their kids to that tournament, or if they're going to go visit for whatever reason, that they have spaces around that park to help them be successful in that space. And it's the caregivers, it's the grandparents. What does the individuals versus the groups look like? We host a lot of programs that use your parks. What are their needs? And it's very different between neighborhood, community, regional, as we looked at earlier. Next, please. Once again, this is one example. This is PlayCorps' example of what does it mean to be inclusive. When you read these 7 bullets, it's common sense, right? Be safe, be smart, be fair, you know, the things that we teach our kids. It goes beyond just adding ramps. Adding ramps is great. It gets kids off the ground, and I've worked with play design for several years now, and I can tell you, kids just want to get 6 inches off the ground. That's lava tag, right?
Yeah.
That's zombie tag. That's walking the plank, and all the dinosaurs will eat you if you fall off. It doesn't have to be huge. It doesn't have to be expensive. There is a balance between structured, durable products that are going to last you 30 years that are your investment, right, versus the combination with natural elements that will degrade and change over time but provide so much value in the thinking of kids, their fine motor skills, their creativity skills, them taking charge of their play and creating their own play and game, as opposed to climb here, slide there, which they also make in the games. But will we really think about moving beyond a structure to include lots more? And structures have a place. I really firmly believe there is a place. And I'll keep going on that in a second. Next, please. Diversity of features is absolutely necessary. There needs to be active spaces, like we're sitting in a place that is programmed to be very active. We have a playground. Thank goodness they designed a playground here, because most of the little siblings who are bored of yet another soccer game are over there, and that place is crowded. But that's actually too small. Thank goodness we have the trail out to the park back here in the woods, because a lot of kids go now back and ramble back there while they're waiting for big brother or sister. Interactive spaces where things can't be manipulated and moved. Places that are peaceful and quiet for somebody who's having a hard day or just needs to have that sensory turn off. I sat down by Turtle Pond at Salmon Creek last night for the best 20 minutes of my week and just like, and the quiet jogger running by. It was really nice. Everything needs to be fun, whatever fun means to folks, and social. Our parks are social environments, so there is thoughtful design behind how to make those successful social interactions for folks. Next, please. And diverse. Diversity is huge. We now know that lawyers and risk managers have tried for years to say, don't make anything that moves. Somebody's going to poke an eye out or a kidney. Well, we now know that school districts, thank goodness, if you haven't been to Lacamas Lake Elementary School, please go visit. It's amazing. They invested probably $1 million on just their playground. And it's the best example we have in Clark County. We have other examples. This is the bottom. These two pictures are from Camas Woodburn, where, you know, $5,000 worth of materials got kids nature play and imagination play on their campus. Play is what it should be. What we were, when we were kids, we were allowed to play with sticks, right? Our monkey's bars were above asphalt. Can you change things to meet safety standards? It's fine. But loose parts are really important. Allowing kids to move branches in parks. It's an ongoing balance with our maintenance crews, and every time I ever showed up on a site, they're like, oh, it's Jane. She's going to ask us to leave branches and plant flowers. Well, those are the areas, and Kip and I have had these discussions on many parks. Who's the next generation of us to care for these spaces if kids don't have the chance to interact and explore these amazing places? Wetlands, butterfly meadows, get hands-on experience. When my kids get to the Salmon Creek Trail, you know, you go behind the softball fields, and then, boom, they're off the trail, and they're through the woods. And, you know, I'll see them 20 minutes later down the way, and they might have fallen into the little mill creek there or purposely jumped into Mill Creek. But, I mean, that's healthy, right? They're going on their own path, building their own confidence to go explore on their own. In providing that chance for every kid, luckily, Mill Creek does have a little path that goes back to where you can stand on that little bridge. So if a child is in a mobility device or a parent is in a mobility-aided device, they can get back to those special little spaces and have that immersion into nature that we know is so important. Next, please. So thoughtful design, and anybody who's done parks design, there's several of us in the room, it's extensive, and it's a lot of conversations up front, but man, it really matters at the end to look at what's appropriate for the site, for the budget, not only to build, but to also maintain, creating as low maintenance as possible, but understanding there's a balance there, especially like we were talking about the Greater Clark's Park District, you know, the more parks we build, the more we have to maintain, how's that money looking, it's stretched. But to be thoughtful of that before we go build stuff, but to know that sometimes huge structures don't always have to be the answer. There can be a great balance between natural and structure built. Trails are absolutely important. You've got the best advocate in town sitting right here at the table with Kelly. Trails are essential. Schools are now starting to put loop paths in. Jennifer has been very supportive in putting loop paths at schools now because they understand the value of kids being able to walk, run, and have those activities available to them. We were talking earlier about what promoting the community identity in parks, celebrating the history of the space in our parks, telling the story. I'm a huge advocate. I'm the one who put a lot of signs along Salmon Creek Trail to tell people about the watersheds in our community. People people love that stuff. They stop and they read the signs. We don't want to be over intrusive because, I mean, we can see right here, there's tons of signs out our windows right now. It's like, oh, more advertising. But people really do enjoy understanding where they're at in the history and why that place became a park. It helps them have ownership, helps them have pride in the community and support it. So the next time you have to go out for a vote, people are like, oh, yeah, Turtle Pond, I know why it's Turtle Pond, and there's these eight species of ducks, and oh, I actually saw this other thing. And once we help them enjoy and engage in their parks as opposed to just walk from here to here, and they actually slow down and appreciate it, that has value, and that comes back to support us time and time again as we ask people for money to buy and build more. There is a difference, obviously, between public and private spaces and how you look at all this, but the essential part of it comes down to parks for everybody is very possible, whether it's a faith-based organization property, a school district, public parks, city, county, otherwise. There's some great resources now and amazing examples all over the world, all over the country, and great research to support the needs for more diverse thinking as opposed to just structure, basketball court, two picnic tables, one trash can, and whatever. I think our community is very open to that, and because we've seen so many examples at our schools, I mean, we now have a Yeti out in Washougal, it's fantastic, at that park. There's lots of great opportunities. Next, please. So, Kevin knows this about me, but I'm a huge fan of leaving some nature for kids to explore. As you look at the update to your parks, you own a lot of property here in Clark County Parks. What a great opportunity to be some of the leaders in our community to create more habitat. And Kevin and his team have been excellent at creating amazing spaces, especially like along the Curtin Creek corridor, where people now have access to walk Curtin, not only up by Sunset Elementary, the Curtin Creek Enhancement Area, where the schools go and do the monitoring up there, but Curtin Creek Wildlife Habitat. Now people can go walk those trails and enjoy the headwaters of Curtin Creek. People will want to protect if they know and have access to. I know people keep breaking into the fences at Curtin Creek Enhancement Area because they can't stay out of it for enjoyment. Yes, there are the kids that get in and do what kids do. I have one of those at home. But he goes in because he enjoys it. He wants to catch the frogs. My kids want to find the butterflies and the caterpillars. This is just a little butterfly garden at a downtown elementary school. These are now being allowed at elementary schools. You know, where we talk about fears of kids getting hurt. Every new Vancouver Public School, every new Evergreen School in their bond measures are getting school gardens. They're getting butterfly gardens. They're getting loop paths. They're supportive of understanding the value of nature to play, to learn, and to also address our health and well-being, which is so critically important, and I hope that becomes a major section in your next PROS plans, is the health and well-being benefits of what parks provide to our community, let alone increases the property values of your neighborhoods and all that kind of stuff. The health and well-being, if you need a resource for that research, the Children of Nature Network has, I can send you the website, has all sorts of amazing data to support the need to put money behind these spaces. So more spots for kids to go explore on natural trails, huge benefit. Next, please. So when it comes to inclusive play and design, who's designing these parks? There's lots of organizations around. I do some. I'm currently working with mostly schools, but there's lots of organizations, nonprofits, there's lots of discussions about, well, how much is enough inclusive, how much is what's right, what's wrong. We all have lessons as these projects get built. We learn more and more as we watch the kids play on them. There is no one answer. If you create an all-inclusive park where every feature is accessible to every kid, you may be taking away some of those more challenging elements that a child with kid who's hyperactive will need to climb a very tall thing, like at Flighta Park, right? The big rope structure in Marshall Park. So we have to find a balance between ramping and creating everything low to the ground for a child in a wheelchair, which is so critically important, creating tactile spaces where those kids can touch and feel that everything that other kids can, as well as providing for the kids who are need to run a big loop path, need to climb very tall pieces. There's ways to find balance with the surfacing type. We need to provide more shade so everybody's more comfortable. There's research out of San Francisco about the heat in some of our major parks and playgrounds, whether at schools or in park properties, where the heat temperature on an 85-degree day is passing 125 degrees. Go out and play and have fun while we go sit in the shade and our kids are melting. This is a real critical factor, and as a parent who cannot handle the heat, I physically cannot handle the heat, I don't take them to certain parks because I can't physically handle it. And then I can't buy enough Gatorade anyways to keep the teenager happy. So there's lots of lessons to learn. So next slide, please. So some of the organizations around town, Harper's Playground is Portland-based. Corey and his family live here in Vancouver. But there's many, many organizations that do inclusive playground designs. Their websites are amazing if you're looking for any research information on what inclusive play looks like. And there's lots of different models out there. But they all basically provide access everywhere. They all provide different sensory input, a sense of moving. The sense of spinning for vestibular development is incredibly huge for kids. The tactile and hands-on fine motor, like sand play and water play, is huge. Let alone physically moving through the site, whether it's on a big accessible swing that either has a back to it so a child can be buckled in, and if they have a mobility challenge can stay upright, or lay on a big disc swing. There's lots of examples. Next, please. So keys to successful playgrounds, well, any kid, the kids are the best designers, they'll tell you, no matter what their ability, they'll tell you they want all these things and more. They want quiet spots, they want short distances, they want long distances, they want things to do and challenge them because they may be on that slide for 2 minutes, they might be on for 2 hours, but the diversity of experiences scattered throughout the parks are really important. Lots of places for the families, the caretakers who are bringing them, A, to get into the park. Part of the transition plan work that we looked at, and I know it's still an ongoing project, is first, can you get to the park? Second, can you get out of your car and get into the park, let alone the bathroom if there isn't a bathroom? Once you get into the park, how do you move through the park? I mean, there's codes and regulations about how percentage of how many features need to be accessible. Everything should be accessible to the greatest extent possible, but know that a child in a wheelchair has different needs than a child who's fully capable, but there's still great ways for them to interact together. And the equipment from manufacturers now allows kids to interact together no matter what their abilities are. But it moves beyond just, well, it all has to be low to the ground because we have to plan for a child in a wheelchair. Well, there are kids that need to be up high. There are kids who need to be down low for whatever reasons. And so there's lots of great opportunities to look at those features to make sure we're doing the best we can to serve everybody. I think that's my last slide. It is. So with that, I don't know if I hit on the topics that you were hoping for, but like I said, there is so much information now, and there's several of us around the community that do this kind of work, that we're available to answer questions, help with your pros, plans, etc.
That is exactly what I wanted.
Oh,
I just want a big lot full of sticks and rocks. Like, I mean, I'm fine. I mean, yeah. Like our traditional vision of the playground, the bench, the basketball hoop.
Yeah.
Like, I live next to a park, and it's lovely, and it's beautiful, and I love it. But the playground structure is often neglected, and it's the kids in the prune trees, collecting prunes, making birds' nests, climbing up the prune tree, throwing the prunes at each other. I mean, it's that thing that seems to where the kids are, like, congregating.
Yes.
And
kids like to climb trees, so when we plant more trees that they could climb, wouldn't that be a beautiful thing?
Yeah.
Now, the lawyer who's overseeing the insurance has a second opinion to that. But let me tell you, I've worked through the risk manager for two of our major school districts, and this is happening at our schools.
I mean, because kids can fall off a traditional playground structure and break their leg.
And they do.
I mean, it's just part of play, unfortunately, as you get hurt sometimes. Yeah. And so, but no, that's kind of where I wanted to go, is how can we bring more inclusion into our parks? How can we change the way we look at traditional park structures? Because there's so much stuff when I travel that I see that I'm like, oh, I wish we were doing that, or even around here. Like, why isn't Clark County doing these things?
Yeah, and the conversation has to include your maintenance crews.
Yes.
Because they have been trained. There is no manual to take care of what I just showed you.
I know.
And, I love them dearly, and certain guys I know, and they love me too back. And I'm like, dang! Oh my gosh, really? Like, yes, leave it messy. And if we define a messy area, and you know, some, and then there's a, well, people are going to think we're neglecting our parks because our grounds crew do take, they're professionals. They yeah. take great pride, and they do an amazing job, especially with the amount of traffic we get in all of our parks. And isn't that fantastic? So having them along the way to talk about what is a good balance mm-hmm. for defining a messy area, and if it's going to be a messy area, you put up a sign or some kind of cue to care. It's yeah. A term coined back in Minnesota, a cue to care to show that we do care about this space. And it is meant to look a little messier, and it is meant to be natural. And we did this at several of our urban wild spaces. It's the one, the 40 acre up by Mount Vista.
Whipple Creek Hollow,
which I named Whipple Creek Hollow to give it a name, because people were just dumping stuff. And we're like, no, this is a place. You, the county people, you paid money for this space. It should be enjoyed. So you put up a few signs, maybe a little kiosk with a map. People are like, oh, we didn't know we had this new trail. You've had it for, 18 years. But the public didn't know. So once you start to incorporate really simple little things like some trail signs, a little information kiosk, some even split rail fence that looks, like you invest in it, that goes a long way to help the grounds crew know that we're trying to keep people from dumping here because we want people to know that this is a trail or this is a thing or a nature play park or whatever.
Yeah.
It's been interesting to see over the years because back when we built Marine Park in 1972, we built a huge turtle, wooden turtle. It was bigger than this table, and it was probably 12 feet tall, and kids loved it. They could climb all over. And, of course, wood doesn't last, so it lasted 10 or 15 years, and it was the talk of the town for kids, and that was what really made Marine Park known, because it was one of those parks out of the way. As a lot of us will talk still about the big slide at Esther Shore Park.
Yeah, totally.
And
I remember.
I imagine you remember that.
Yeah.
But, those go away and other things come. And we put a really big slide in Leverage Park years ago that was on the hillside there.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer there, but there's been a lot of efforts and they've come and go. But we got to keep, that's why this is important for us to keep pushing it, because if you allow the lawyers to dictate, you won't have anything.
Yeah.
And it goes to the merry-go-round up in Louisville Park that when the new playground went in and the crews loved it so much that they snuck it back into the woods.
Yeah.
It was there for many years. I'm sad that it's disappeared now. But
you saw the new designs that you can eliminate any problem with it.
Yeah.
The merry-go-round, the picture you used
yeah.
here was perfect for that.
The playground manufacturers have come in a huge way in creating dignity slides where if a child goes down the slide, they can scoot over and wait for their wheelchair to come back down to them. I mean, there's lots of innovations that were not in place when the Greater Clark Parks District came along. But, Portland is one of the leaders in the nation for some really amazing, innovative looks, including tables in a neighborhood park, so that parents can sit and not have to interact with their kids.
And I
let them go.
I have that fight with my husband every time we take our girls to the park. I say, quit playing with them. Every time. Like, let them go and meet their,
Yeah, and it's okay to
go.
Play.
It's okay, but you don't need to do it every time and shame me that I'm sitting down. They're out there.
Yeah,
living their life.
Let them grow and go, right?
Yeah.
So, there's a balance for all of it. When we first put in the nature play at Marshall Park as an experiment, half the time it was the parents and the kids. The kids was the leader. Follow me down the lava path.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how many times do you see parents interact with their kids on a playground? So they were both having imagination play and then had a story to tell that night. So there's a balance, right?
Totally.
And thank you to Kelly for his years and years of service to keep that vision going.
Yeah. And I think the thing with nature play, too, I'm on Lakeshore's subcommittee for their playground,
mm-hmm.
so I'm familiar with your plan there.
And, yes.
The maintenance folks, they're not wanting any of your nature play area, and I'm
no,
fighting for it. I'm fighting.
Thank you.
But the fact
fighting.
That nature stuff does decompose,
yeah.
and that's just part of the process, and that in terms of maintenance, we shouldn't get, that shouldn't be the sticking point. Yeah, it falls apart. It goes away.
You throw out some more.
Yeah, like whatever, rocks, and then it turns into sticks they can chase each other with or whatever. I mean, but the fact that it doesn't mean that we can't rebuild it.
Yeah,
or,
that's the point.
And that shouldn't be the sticking point of never putting nature play stuff in as maintenance.
Well, because if the logs deteriorate, then all this free material to build fairy houses.
Yeah.
Or gnome houses, or make a path that all of a sudden the Hot Wheel car goes down the path. You know, Hauk's logs, I've put logs out there 3 times now, and now they're so withered that they've become this moat around the one tree, and the kids hide in the moat, and thank goodness.
I'm so sad I just met you. I feel like we could have been best friends. Like, and we're so already can be.
It can be, and thank you for your work on Lakeshore, because I'm sad the grant isn't going to happen, but there's still lots of great opportunities, and now that we've done Harney Elementary. I don't know if you've seen the Harney Nature Play.
I've heard of it.
It's huge.
Yeah, I heard it.
It turned out great.
Go check it out.
So, yeah. We survived Harney. We can do more.
You can do anything if you did
we
that.
We can.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for coming. And I hope you're willing to maybe come one or two more times when we're delving into our pros plan.
About to say, it would be really good to have Jane back. Jane? Yes, Jane.
Yep.
When we're talking about what does a park look like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we may even want to invite a couple other people just to broaden our view.
Well, I understand that next month Steve Kern will be here. Is that what you said?
Oh, awesome.
It would be good if you came back.
Yep.
That's going to be a real interesting conversation in some sense.
Let me know when.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. It's nice to meet you all.
Thanks, Jane.
Thank you for what you do. This is really important work.
Thank you. Oh, we've almost stayed on time.
Almost.
Close.
All right.
I'll breeze through it.
Breeze.
Okay.
Or take your time. Whatever feels right, Kevin.
Okay, so the first thing, I think I mentioned this before, but the county's working on a homeless encampment cleanup policy or procedure. So I have a meeting with Councilor Quirin on Monday to talk about what we have done or what we haven't done, what I haven't done. But so this kind of stems out of years ago, there was a lawsuit where public agencies cleaning up homeless encampments, taking their stuff and disposing of it, and that being deemed personal property, and the public agency was liable. So we developed a policy, our district court developed a policy to make sure that we protect people's rights. And that was maybe almost 6 or 7 years ago now. And we haven't gone any further. So what it says is we see an encampment, we post it, and this happens in parks a lot. So we post it, we wait 72 hours, and lets them know, get your stuff out of here because we're going to come clean this up. It's not a very comprehensive policy or procedure for that matter, so council's asked us to come up with something. Bill was kind of leading the charge on this. Bill left me with it. So I've been soliciting input from partners and taking that back to council soon. There was a presentation at the Washington Parks and Recreation Association meeting that was really, really cool about just how different agencies are dealing with this problem. And we're seeing the problem grow. Because as we grow, the homelessness issue also grows with your population increase. So we have to have a way that we have to make sure that the county takes care of our properties, protects people's rights, and also protects the safety of our workers. So that's kind of the flavor of what we're working on right now. If you guys are ever interested in seeing that policy and procedure and understanding it more, let me know, and we can do a 10 or 15 minute presentation.
I think that's actually a huge topic right now,
yeah.
And well worth the review.
Okay.
I think we ought to put that on the agenda in the fall.
We can do that. We're supposed to take it back to council for some direction. So I'm assuming that's what Councilor Quiring is going to ask me about, and we'll plan something. So after that work session, then we can bring it back to you guys.
Perfect.
Okay. So a couple meetings recently about Lower Daybreak. We were supposed to present 30% plans to you at this meeting, and the consulting team is just a little bit behind schedule. So we're focusing on the next meeting. We're going to commit to that. So we'll have a 10-minute presentation on Lower Daybreak and how the trail design is progressing and how we are doing the schedule. I think overall the schedule is fine. It looks like we might need to request an extension on the grants to make sure that we get through the entire construction process. It's progressing nicely.
Is that deadline in July?
It runs with the state fiscal budget, and I believe that it's July of 2021.
Oh.
So getting through the full design process, the permitting process, and then getting it out to bid, getting done with construction, we're looking at it'll probably be constructed that same summer, so it'll go beyond July in all likelihood. Cozy Camp is kind of in the same boat, working on early concept designs. And I really would like to get your feedback as they start to put together these different concepts.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going out to the neighborhood again as well. Just with all the discussions that we've had about parks standards and what a park looks like, that maybe we can inform the design team on that. We've also been faced with the uncertainty of, if you remember Cozy Camp, it fronts 29th Avenue, just south of 179th Street. And the other cross street is 175th. And it's a tiny little street that doesn't go through. We're uncertain if we're going to have to pay for frontage improvements on that. So that's a discussion we'll be having next week with our with the other departments in the county about what we can and can't do, how much is that going to cost if we have to do that kind of thing. Harmony Sports Complex nearing contract with McKay Esposito. We will start on the design for those improvements very soon. And Laura's going to request, or we did already get an extension for the grant, right?
We did through June 30th of 2021.
This past week was a meeting with the developers for, it's called the Three Creek Development, that's Killian's project up on 179th Street. So we had an opportunity, Ahmad and I met with the consulting team for Three Creeks to talk through some concepts about their parks and trails development and looking forward to some kind of a developer's agreement, PIF credits, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So they had some really neat ideas, and we talked about having them come and give a presentation to you guys, if you're open to that, probably maybe, I think, 2 months from now, so not July, but maybe August, because I think July we have the presentation from the other, what was the gentleman's name?
It's from the
Cascade. Yeah, Cascade.
Public Cascade.
So looking at August and having them come and
that'd be great.
Talking about the different concepts that they have. They're looking at a lot of trail opportunities and interconnected park situations. So I thought it would be good to have them present it to you and get some feedback. Ahmad has asked that we push out the, or get going on the Camp Bonneville request for qualifications. So this would be where we select up to 5 consultants and have them develop different concepts for Camp Bonneville. So I'm working on all of the procedural requirements behind that request for qualifications, and then we would enter into contract with essentially five consulting firms, give them seed money to start developing concepts for some of those ones. That should be in the next couple months that we get that out.
Who's going to develop the criteria behind who we pick?
I'm working on that.
You'll share with that with us.
Well, yeah, so what council has asked for is things like experience in public-private partnerships, master planning of parks and recreation facilities, things of that nature. Fee-for-service types of recreational amenities, those are some of the criteria.
Can you share those with us before the meetings, whenever they come to us?
Yeah.
So we get a chance to study those a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
Great.
Along the lines of the discussion about Moulton Falls earlier today, council has asked us for an update on Conservation Futures and the $7.3 million bond project, where we are with all of those projects. So Pat has been actively working with all of our partners to find out where they are, and we will be giving a presentation to council in the very near future about those projects. I don't know if you had asked for an update on, is that something that we were thinking about doing?
Yeah, I'm not sure we need a presentation, but I would love to get a copy of their PowerPoint.
Okay. Yeah, we can do that. I think we're going to do it in council time, but I hope that the idea is that we put together at least a presentation that shows each of the 10 projects and current status. So quite a few of the partners are making really good progress. At least one of the projects is going to fall off.
Which one was that?
That was Rock Creek.
Rock Creek, right.
Which was the forest conservation, where the land trust would pursue conservation easements over 300 or so acres of forest.
That was the most exciting one, unfortunately.
Yeah, so that one. So the idea behind this is council wants to know, is there potentially capacity to purchase the property from DNR? Mm-hmm. That's a decision that they pursue and DNR is open to. And then Vancouver Lake. There's been a lot of discussion about milfoil, and I'm not sure if I've given you guys an update on that, so I wanted to. So about a year ago, the State Department of Fish and Wildlife applied for a grant to the Department of Ecology to develop an aquatic vegetation management plan for the milfoil in Vancouver Lake, and we are a partner in that grant. We'll be helping them with survey and then actual writing of the management plan. And in parallel to that effort, some of the rowing club and sailing club members have gotten together and are pursuing control of the milfoil before we would get through with our planning process, because they're really concerned about.
Is that the nonprofit that was recently formed?
Yes. So yeah, they've gone through the process to develop a nonprofit. And they've been successful at getting money from the port, from, they were pursuing Furstenberg, I think the Furstenberg Foundation, for some money. We are looking at possibly providing REIT money towards it in the future. And we're also helping with kind of in-kind match and providing staff to help with survey. So what it's looking, the way it's shaping up is the grant that we have with the state will provide for some initial survey work that will be followed by the port or by the various partner agencies doing follow-up survey work that's like three-dimensional bathymetric views of what's inside the lake. And then later this year, like in August, they will hire a contractor to come and treat the milfoil in the lake. with a new chemical called Procellar. That's being listed by the state as allowed in aquatic situations. So what we're hoping to do is to have some information that we can push out to users of the lake and Vancouver Lake Park, and just, this is what's happening, here's a fact sheet about what they're doing, this, is it safe for people to be in the water, you know, that kind of stuff. So that's all been progressing pretty nicely.
So are you working with the nonprofit that's raising the funds?
Yeah.
Are they going to be doing anything beyond fundraising, or are they?
They're doing the fundraising, and they're doing the fancy bathymetric surveys of milfoil in the water. They're actually going to, their approach is more technologically advanced than what the state is doing. The state is doing old-fashioned point sampling. So the two together will form a really good map of what's in the lake and what needs to be treated. And then they also will pay for the contractor to come and treat the milfoil later. In the meantime, we'll develop the management plan and then pursue funding next year for follow-up treatment. So it should be a pretty good team approach. And I've just been working to keep the state and that private
perfect
group,
example of partnership.
Yeah, talking. And other than that, vacancies. So we have Jeremy's former position, the resource management coordinator, interviews Tuesday this coming week. So hopefully we'll have another body to help us out. The parks manager position has been posted for a while.
And oh, it has?
Yes.
Oh, I thought it wasn't going to be till like the end of the year.
Yeah, it was posted early. Ahmad was able to get the county manager to agree to get it posted.
That's great.
Yeah. So I'm not sure where he is with reviewing applications or if he's even started that yet, because he has half a dozen other vacancies he's working on.
Quite a few, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, the Karen's leaving July 3rd is her last day.
No, I did not. Did you guys?
I did not.
You guys didn't know Karen?
No. Was she here so we can berate her?
She was. I thought we mentioned that to you at the last meeting. Sorry.
No.
So Karen Llewellyn is leaving us.
Oh.
She's moving on to not greener pastures, but drier, browner pastures in eastern Oregon, eastern Washington, sorry. They're moving to her husband's family's farm to become dryland wheat farmers.
Oh, wow.
Her husband's taken over the family farm. So,
wow.
Yeah. So she's actually moving to, is it Wilbur? Is that Wilbur? I didn't even know there was a town called Wilbur.
Yep.
Probably very few people do.
Yeah. So yeah, her last day is July 3rd.
Oh no.
And we need to find a volunteer coordinator. Luckily we have Dora, who's been her assistant all this time.
Right.
Fantastic. We'll keep our ship afloat.
Eric's just like, guys.
I don't know. I have chained him to the desk,
I
so
would
he will
imagine.
Not be able to leave.
Eric's sitting alone. By himself. Well, that's sad, but
yeah,
good for her.
Is. Yeah.
I feel like every time you come to a meeting, you tell us someone else is leaving. Kevin, get it together.
Next time.
Chain them all.
Next time we're going to have an announcement about new people. But I would like to introduce David in the back there. David's a new team member.
Okay.
So that's good news. David joined us about a month ago. Not quite a month ago.
Yeah.
So he's doing administrative tasks, helping with Camp Bonneville, railroad, and other parks duties.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Wow.
Welcome.
Yeah.
All right. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Any questions for me?
I thought he was here to yell at us later.
Let's see. So, roundtable discussion. Anyone have anything? Or has this 3 hours and 20 minutes been enough to get all your feelings out?
Nature play area.
Nature play area. And John's, yes. But all of our future ones. I shared it on the Parks Advisory page. I don't know if you saw your nature play area.
I did.
Yeah, it was very cool. When I saw it on the front page, I was like,
is it open officially?
It is.
Oh.
It is.
I don't know where we're going.
Mm-hmm. Yes, congratulations on that. It turned out really cool. I didn't realize it was coming so quickly.
Yeah, no, they've busted it out in like 3 months.
Yeah.
That's great.
We haven't announced publicly yet, but we did take possession of the Evergreen Arboretum on the 6th of May. So as trustees, we own the property now.
Awesome.
That's a little scary, but it's also true.
Kelly, who is we?
We is the trustees, the five trustees of the property as a nonprofit now.
Great.
So that means more concerns and worries. And the other thing I want to bring up, and there's so much I could say about what this conference I was at in Paris, but you can look on my Facebook page for most of that. But one of the things that we're going to have to address as we move forward, and it's a huge issue globally, not only in Portland and Vancouver, but globally, and that's housing equity. That's what term they're using for homeless people now. And you can see people living right along the freeway in Portland, and some of the court cases are going to make it impossible for us to convince the public to fund trails if nothing but homeless people are going to be living along our greenways. So we got a real challenge ahead of us, and we're going to have to work with the community development people to figure out how we're going to address housing equity and parks. Yeah. That was what our topic was in Paris. It's a big issue, and I don't even know the answers to it. But if we intend to do the things we perceive as important to us, we're going to have to work with others.
Sure.
The other thing I just was going to point out is we talk about how much open space we need for standards and everything. We had a presentation from a guy from Mumbai, India, and he said that they have something like 4 cubic feet of open space per person in their area. Can you imagine? We talk about maybe
acres.
They talk about in square feet. So
so we've got that going for us.
It's pretty tight.
Don't tell the D board that.
No. Oh God, no. Well, their health, their life expectancy in those particular communities is under 40.
Yeah.
Too, so
there you go.
I have TIF accounts. This is the second time I've heard the city say that they magically can combine their acquisition and development.
I wrote that down
and
too.
I'd really like to know how
RCW.
They do.
And I saw Laura look at me.
Because I asked before and she told me the same thing, and that's why I wanted to make it real clear, like nothing left over that's separate.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious, when we were in concurrency issues 2 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. And
it's just
something definitely we need to explore.
Yeah, we will dig into that. Because I have the same question. As we start to talk about trails, do we need another account for that? If there's no reason to separate acquisition from development, and we have the freedom to spend on trails now. Period.
Yeah. Right.
I just want to answer that question.
Yeah.
No, I think we definitely need
Can we make sure we add that to next month's agenda, the answer to all that?
Yeah.
Because, that is weird. All right.
Interesting to hear what the answer is.
Oh, go, Laura, please. Go. No, you go.
We have one more meeting for the Lewis and Clark Trail, which is next week on the 20th, which is Thursday. We received a letter from both the U.S. and the State Department of Fish and Wildlife opposing our alignment that we thought we'd agreed on. I have it in writing. We like this line. We're like, okay, that's our number 3, so that's the one we'll put in the maps that we'll review for next week. So the letter is in your packet to keep you informed of that communication. We'll see what happens, but I just wanted you to be aware of their stance. So that's. And then I also have an outdoor bill of rights for children that was in Austin, Texas, that I thought was kind of cool. I didn't bring enough for everybody, but just thought I could share it for you to pass.
So this letter is from the new Columbia Guard Company also?
So Columbia,
so
I shared a presentation previously that they have property just below and adjacent to the Natural Wildlife Refuge, and the Highway 501 Urbanal Rigor goes right through the middle of their parcels. And so I'm sure that they looked at that and said, hey, did you guys know this is going on? And talk to them, so they have them sign on it also. Mr. Fazio had said we could use his dike mm-hmm. as a crossing, and they have his name with as no. copied on the letter as well. So
is his signature on it?
I don't see that his signature's on it, but
well, that's disappointing.
And that dike is Fazio's?
Al Fazio?
Yeah. North dike there?
Yeah. He said he was fine with us using that as trail access to make the connection. So we'll have to have those conversations again. And I'll reach out to him to see if he'll be there Thursday or not.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, thanks for all your hard work on that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Two steps forward, two steps back sort of
yeah.
project.
Yeah, I mean, thank you to Kelly for the effort made clear back when, and here we are still fighting the good fight.
Well,
I go back to it's a public process, and the state does stuff like this all the time.
Yep.
They have a public process, and they ask for comments, and people give them their comments, and then they say thank you, and this is our preferred alternative, right? So
yeah,
at some point we might need to take that stance that this is our preferred alternative,
mm-hmm.
and whether you like it or not, it's still our preferred alternative.
Mm-hmm.
That's not very friendly, but and ultimately, a lot of it's their property, so
yeah, tricky.
Yeah,
some sort of balance, and
it is
we will have some more public input as well. And I mean, I think we all agree that wildlife is important. I reached out to the city of Ridgefield and others who are advocates and want to make sure that people have a natural experience and aren't just walking on the road in order to get geotourism their direction. So we'll see how it goes. We'll let you know.
The timing of telling people things is important. That's why when we do our public involvement with neighborhoods about a park, and then we go and do something that the professionals tell us it has to be this way or that way. And we have to kind of, we got to get back to our people and say, this is why we're not doing what it's all a communication.
Thank you.
Hopefully it happens before, not after.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
I do have a question.
Yeah. Kale, please talk.
Yeah.
We haven't heard from you all day, no.
Oh, there's so many.
Yes.
About a little over a year from now, we will break ground on the new Mountain View High School. It's going to be built on the same site, and students will maintain the use of the current building while the new building is being built. But what that means is for a two-year period, they will lose their athletic fields. And so a logical suggestion that comes up is exploring Harmony Sports Complex as a use. Is that something that would explore with the county or with the tenants that are using?
I think it would be a combined.
Okay.
Yeah, because the relationship with those tenants is so, I think, so formalized, and they have a lot of control of the site that we need to talk together.
Okay.
But yeah.
Great.
Just let me know whenever you want to start that discussion.
Okay.
We can set something up.
Great. I'll reach out to you.
Yeah.
Super.
Okay. Anything else? Going once? Twice? I need a gavel.
Good job.
Yeah, which is always going to happen. But you know, so 2 for 2 is 30 instead of 3, right? It's Google.
Good to see you.
Three.
Hang in there.